Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Good Bit Podcast. We are here in a super-sized edition inside Ian's studio. There's four of us on today's episode, and we're going to try and shoot it in a way where we can see everybody at equal levels. We don't want to get too much in the belly. We don't want to get too much in the head. We're going to try and talk in amongst ourselves nice and cosy.
He's got my belly.
That's a huge belly.
That's ridiculous.
You want to fix the belly?
Well, no, what can you do? What can you do? It's just got my... Yes. There we go. How lovely.
Okay, cool. Terrific. And everything seems... Another lean didn't make there. Everything seems right. Ewan's back on the show.
Hey, everybody.
It's back. We went through a wee period there where Ewan was on all the time. And then it was... I haven't met. It was lockdown. Lockdown did have a big kind of change to the podcast because we had to go on Zoom and stuff like that. You did a few on Zoom, actually.
Yeah. So you were desperate.
Desperate for guests, so that's how we went back to you. Much like today. And we were doing different guests every single week, and you know, it was going really, really well. But it's just, as I'm sure you can imagine, it's a bit of a nightmare trying to get everyone's schedules in the kind of same place. Again, a bit like today, trying to get everybody in the same place. Yeah.
So you're his man Friday.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah. On the Friday of Valentine's week, everybody, we're all here together.
Yeah.
Oh.
We're all here.
I'm just happy to be back.
No, I'm happy to have you. This is weird. I don't want to turn around.
I know, this.
But yeah, how have you been? I mean, it's been so long since you've been on. I'm so happy you're back. Something feels right with the world, the fact you're back.
Are you going to say the return of Dia Beethoven?
Dia Beethoven. We went through a phase, I can't remember, I went through a phase where I was asking people to come up with nicknames. And I did ask you, I can't remember what yours was.
Well I was, when I was a roadie, back in the day, I was called Gigantor.
For any reason in particular?
I was just a very big teenager.
I can imagine.
You know?
I can imagine, yeah.
You know, people couldn't believe I was only 16 and I was going around all these pubs and clubs setting up bands. And until I was asked to leave school.
Ah, yes.
Because I was never there, because I was always with a band.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
Yeah, and that's why you got your name?
But that was their name. It wasn't very imaginative of them, I suppose.
Imagine it.
Yes, I'd have maybe liked something a little bit better, but more imaginative. But
well, this is your moment.
I can't think. You've sprung this on me.
I know. It's not a thing anymore.
Well, you still remembered it all these years.
I still remembered. Well, there you go. It was memorable, I suppose. Yeah. But no, I've always just been Big Greavesy.
Big Greavesy. I like that. I got a car. I bought my first ever car recently, and it's a Mocha, Vauxhall Mocha, so it's quite big. It's because I like coffee. And my boss said, oh, you need to give it a name. You need to give it a proper name. I don't do that. Yeah. I don't give it like a proper name. So she just out of nowhere was like, you should call it the Emperor. So that's stuck there.
Oh, that's marvellous.
The Emperor.
Yeah, and it's nothing like my personality. You know what I mean? I'm definitely not an Emperor. I'm more of a Chancellor.
But is it the personality of a Mocha?
No, well, it's a Mocha X hatchback.
Right.
Ewan was just in it.
Yeah, I felt safe.
Did you feel as though it was Emperor-like?
No.
What would you call it? Chris's car.
Chris's car, yeah. I felt safe.
What's that film with a wee Emperor?
I don't know.
What?
Is there not the mini little Emperor?
The Last Emperor.
The Last Emperor. Is he not quite wee?
He's quite wee, yeah. But they don't call it the wee Emperor.
The wee emperor. It's not wee yet, it's sizable car.
It's like I wanted something a bit bigger than my mum's car that I was driving because my head was bouncing off the roof every time we went over a bump.
Well, that's always going to be a problem with you unless you got a bubble car.
That's true.
You'd be driving about in something the Jetsons have.
Popmobile might be coming up.
Ah, no, that would work for you.
I'm not calling it the
You could sit down in it and it'd be all right.
Ian, they weren't around in the 80s. In the 80s, the Pope came to Britain. And he had a Pope mobile, and it was like
that was the official name.
Yeah, and it was like a big glass cage that he stood up in.
Bulletproof glass cage.
Yeah,
cage.
Like a disabled car.
Dome.
Like on like a roller coaster where it goes over your head like that.
Yeah. So that would suit you.
Yeah. Okay. It's too late now. I've got the car.
I mean, people think you're very paranoid, but you know
that's true. Also,
we all went to see the Pope too. I went to see him.
Did you?
I have no interest.
You never told me that.
We all queued up in Edinburgh to see the Pope. What going past in his Pope mobile?
Honestly, first time I'm hearing this.
Really?
Yeah.
Surprise.
Was it everything you hoped it would be?
Yeah. Was it as good as going to see Bowie?
I haven't thought about it until now, until I thought that would be the perfect car for you.
I really don't want to be associated with the Pope mobile.
I know, but, you know, people are thinking about that right now.
Yeah.
And it's going to stick.
A lot of people are going to be Googling it right now as well. I think,
you do like to wave when you're driving.
I think Iona is already sort of doing something on Photoshop.
Or Canva, which she uses. So Iona's not here. That's someone that is missing today. She's very sad to not be here. But she didn't go see the film we were going to discuss, so I don't know why she's angry.
No.
I don't know. She's slacking, really, isn't she?
No,
she's
I know.
Gone from sad to angry in 2 seconds.
2 seconds. Mm.
Is she sad or angry?
Yeah.
Both.
She's sangry.
Or ad. We had an episode last week where we chatted about Leave the World Behind, Netflix film, and The Killer. Well,
yes.
You guys saw The Killer, and I gave them homework to watch The Killer, and I never actually watched it. Right? I forgot about it.
People think that's maybe a joke.
It wasn't though.
You give us homework. It is homework, isn't it? We don't choose the films. He chooses the films.
Well, there was years where you gave me homework, so...
Yes.
Piece of power play.
Do you not want my nickname?
Sorry. Yes, please. What was your nickname?
My nickname has been and is Deverage, isn't it?
Right. Deverage.
Yes.
Very nice. Where did I come from?
From Ian's sister, actually, because my name was Beveridge and I was a bit of a diva. So when she didn't like me, she used to call me the Deverage is coming. So, but it's now a term of endearment, isn't it?
You've made it so.
It's also your Instagram handle. Mm-hmm. I noticed that last week when I was trying to tag you in the post.
It's been with me for a long time.
Yeah.
The diva.
Yes.
Deverage.
You still use Beveridge, though, sometimes. Performance-wise.
Yes, because that's my real name. Deverage is a nickname.
No, I know. But I mean, you don't go Amanda Grieve.
No, because that's not my professional
name. That is your real
name,
married name.
That's her enslaved name.
It's not my real name. Yeah, no, Beveridge is my real name.
Got you.
I am Amanda Beveridge, but Amanda Beveridge. My link to him is Amanda Grieve.
Grieve.
My slave name.
But Grieve's a really good name.
But I'm not a Grieve.
I know, just saying.
I'm a Beveridge, and I used to get upset that the letters that arrived from Mrs. Beveridge on the letterbox were from my sister-in-law, not me, because I was no longer Beveridge. Not good. Try living without your real name.
That would be scary.
You wanted me here as a female point of view. There we are.
That's true.
There we go.
Did want you here as a female point of view. Well, what I was going to say was...
Well, that took a turn. That's going to test your mettle as a host.
You wanted me here as a female
I'm
point
so
of
glad
view.
I'm just a guest these days.
This is why he handed the reins over to me. He didn't want the stress of this.
No way.
Trying to deal with the guests.
Yeah,
jeez.
You choose the movies.
The divas.
No, well, I did choose the movies, and that's what I was going to say. I did watch The Killer, finally. The new film on Netflix. I kind of know exactly what you were talking about.
Mm.
Yeah. There's no real narrative. There's no real story, really.
No.
It's individual stories, right? And there's no real stakes or any payoff, really.
No.
Whatsoever.
It's a Fincher.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
I haven't seen it.
No.
Do you like David Fincher?
Yeah.
Well, then you might enjoy it, but it seems to be a film that David Fincher people enjoy.
Right.
Is that
I
a
wouldn't
thing?
Say I'm like a diehard fan or
no.
anything.
Mm. But I think that's probably one of the faults of this week's film as well.
What's that?
Poor Things.
Poor Things. Yeah. Because of the filmmaker or the style of the film?
Yeah. Who made the you're film either again? A fan or you're not a fan.
What's the name of the filmmaker again? I've forgotten.
Yorgos.
You need to go and check it out right now. This is embarrassing. I'm going on IMDb.
That's a shame for you.
IMDb,
right.
Please. Peeps. International Movie Database.
So none of us are obviously fans of him.
Let me just get his name up.
I'll get his name.
I didn't know.
Yorgos.
He is a Norwegian fella.
Yes.
Isn't he? And... we'll get them up right now.
What's it called? Poor Things.
When you do see
I can't believe you do this. I mean, when I was doing the Rap Chat, which you can still get archive.
On Spotify, not Apple.
I mean, there was notes and everything. We actually pre-wrote all our stuff. I mean, I mean it sounds like, you know, we were just making up rubbish as we went along. But, oh no, it was carefully scripted rubbish.
No, listen, we do notes sometimes, but sometimes it's good just to go, what did you think?
I know.
Yeah, it was all right. That's sometimes all it takes.
That's it, Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yes, so tell us more of the works.
Lanthimos.
All right, you should. Okay, I'll do that. I was going to say, look at the other films that you've done.
Yeah, I know the other films.
The Lobster.
Lobster.
Ah, yes.
killing of
a, which is interesting, sacred killing deer. A sacred deer, which I found weird,
really weird. And that's where I met Barry Keoghan, not personally, but first time I saw him, Barry Keoghan,
odd one,
and that was like, that guy is weird, not only weird looking, sorry Barry, but like, he's got that look about him that is just somewhat, I don't know,
cross-eyed.
Yeah, but just kind of odd.
Yeah, he's,
you know,
odd looking with a bulbous nose and cross eyes.
Very strong facial structure, though. Really hits you in the face.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, really good look. Really good actor, actually.
He's all the rage these days.
He's all the rage.
Quirky looks are in, though, aren't they?
Yeah, they are a bit. Like Billie Eilish.
Billie Eilish.
Billie Eilish.
Is that a wrestler?
No, but it could be Billie Eilish's good bit nickname.
She's quirky looking.
I think she's quirky looking. Yeah. Yeah, she's very pretty though.
Yeah,
she's very pretty. But like people like that are in just now, aren't they? Like Barry Keoghan and whoever else.
I mean, she's bumping against my mic.
Sorry.
So it's okay, carry on.
I don't know why, I apologise. So we're going to talk about Poor Things, and I guess that would have been a nice segue for Saltburn. But let's chat about Poor Things first. Killing of a Sacred Deer, that's the one I was going to talk about. Nicole Kidman?
Yes, that's right.
Yes,
and
that's right.
And the Irish fella Colin Farrell. Yeah. I can barely remember it. My favourite one of his films so far was The Favourite.
Yes.
I liked that.
That was very funny.
It was quite extraordinary, and I quite liked it. I think, you know, you were talking about Fincher and stuff, and there's a thing about, I don't know if you call Fincher an auteur, but there's something about auteurism, this idea that you're authoring a film, so you've got a sort of visual stamp,
yeah,
or something that's your tricks, that's in your repertoire of filmmaking and stuff like that. And I'm beginning to wonder whether or not it's actually working at the moment, because I was just thinking about this the other day. It's you know, the recent movies by noted auteurs, people like Wes Anderson, people like Tarantino when he did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and you begin to think they've actually created a little template for themselves, so they're copying themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the originality level is coming down slightly.
The more they do
every time, because they're just doing not a parody of themselves, but they're following a pre-written template, which is I don't know if I'm right, it's just a thought, you know, that for the at the moment.
Do you feel Steven Spielberg did that?
A little bit.
But not so much. He didn't use the same colour palette.
No. Well, because he was... I don't mean this to sound terrible, but because his films were... he was using very pop... He was almost doing... the Indiana Jones films, certainly, were kind of homages to old filmmaking ideas. So they weren't original. They were just his interpretation of them in a way, you know what I mean? And then there's other films where you go, okay, he's been very Steven Spielberg, because there's a sweet, which isn't a bad thing, but it's
like comfort films, though, right? And like adventures that you would watch with your family. You know you're going to get a comfort film with him.
There's some Steven Spielberg films you watch where you don't know it's him directing. Schindler's List is one of them, obviously, but there's things like Bridge of Spies, which isn't obviously a Steven Spielberg film. What's the other one? Catch Me If You Can.
Catch Me If You Can, yeah.
That's
yeah.
not obviously a Steven Spielberg film.
No.
So he did kind of... He was a bit more moved with the film, the story. He allowed that to adjust him a little bit more than some of the other stuff.
I think so. That's fair to say, yeah.
Yeah. And also, what I was going to say, what about Christopher Nolan? Is he another one? Because his kind of style is that it really makes you think. They use the kind of essence of time. They go back in time and then they show the film in reverse and stuff like that. And that's a very Nolan thing.
Yeah.
So you watch Tenet, for example, and you're going, I know exactly who made this film, because you're trying to remember what's going on halfway through it.
Well, do you not think that's the reason Tenet doesn't work as well as his other movies? It's because it's kind of a remake of
Inception.
Yeah. Whereas Oppenheimer isn't really a remake of any of his previous films, but it has little stylistic...
Things that he does,
but the story, as Mandy says, about story and letting the period and the story and the characters take it, sort of demand the way the film is made, and he can put his little essence to it. I think that's why actually he would be, if they could persuade him, it would be interesting to see him doing a Bond movie, because he wouldn't do a Bond movie. He would integrate it somehow. I don't know, that could be interesting because, yeah. You know, who knows how to do them anymore, you know?
I know. But I think I do go and see films because, maybe it's because I'm a film fan or whatever and I do follow these people, but like I go and see them because I know it's another one of their films.
Yeah.
You know, so Oppenheimer was such a big thing over the summer and it was battling Barbie at the same time because he's built up this reputation. Mm. You know, everyone's going to go see this new Nolan film that's got all these huge stars in it and it's going to be over 3 hours long and it became like a big epic. But it's the same with Fincher. It would be the same with Wes Anderson. I went to see Asteroid City because it was Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
Didn't like it anywhere near as much as I thought I would, but I went to see it just because it was him. I do the same with actors as well, I think. Even if I've never even heard of the film.
Yeah
that's a thought. Yeah, that's, you know, this is what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's a really good notion, actually. I think that's right. Did you like it? Did you like Poor Things, Ian?
Yeah, I did. Well, I liked bits of it.
Yeah.
Once you get kind of acclimatised to the nature of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of, I didn't really know what to expect. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was like a kind of Frankenstein thing when I went in. And then it's kind of not really like that.
Yeah.
But like you're saying about the style of the director, he's got like a specific kind of way that he shoots it, like that fish. Is it fish eye?
Yeah, good call.
You know, the lens and stuff.
Catches you off guard at times, actually.
Takes a bit to get used to.
Yeah, it does.
Because I think the only other film that I've seen is The Lobster, and that was a while ago. I can't even really remember.
I've not seen that one.
But I wasn't. I think, was I'd that never my seen first the favorite one of him? Or anything.
Oh, no, The Favourite. No, The Favourite.
I hadn't seen that one.
There's a lot of use of it in that, usually with carriage journeys and things like that. You use the fisheye lens or the wide angle fisheye.
I feel that with both The Favourite and with Poor Things, that he very much puts the viewer, me, us, very much in a spectator kind of role. I don't really feel ever involved, or I don't feel that I identify with any of the characters. I feel very much that I'm watching something unravel rather than being emotionally touched. I don't ever feel emotionally involved with it. I don't know if that's interesting, which is fair enough. You're sitting watching, being entertained, working something out, not knowing what comes next. But I didn't feel, and I didn't with The Favourite either, emotionally invested at all. I felt I was just waiting for what was going to happen next. Maybe if I saw it twice, or maybe if I'd be very interested to see, because I think it's very different from the book. I'd be interested to hear if somebody had read the book, because I think he cut out a huge amount of the style of the way it was written. So I'd be quite interested to hear what was missing from the book.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's hard to connect with it when it's so like heightened and it's not
out there.
It's not really like anything that you know.
They're kind of like doll-like characters. Yeah. Even the Favourite as well. They were kind of like doll-like, over the top and extreme, weren't they? In a disgusting way and yet a sort of vulgar way, kind of. Yeah. Which is not a bad thing. I'm not saying that's a negative thing. I'm thinking of that. Quite shocking characters.
Well, I certainly can't say like I really connected with the characters and stuff, but I did feel bad for Emma Stone's characters at times, and want her to succeed and want everything to work out for her. And I think you do go on a journey. It's relatively long. It's like 2.5 hours long, so it's, they've got time to tell that story and stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't know where it was going because I didn't know the story. I hadn't read the book. I was with my sister, actually, who has read the book and knew it quite well. And she said it did a really good job. I don't know if she noticed the big chunk that was maybe removed, but she did say it was a kind of good depiction of the book. But she was going in expecting it to be really weird. And she's like, you don't know what you're going into here. And I like that. I like not knowing. I like just the face value. It's like going to see these random films that you would never see any other day of the week, but because maybe you've got your unlimited card or whatever, you're going to go see it regardless.
Absolutely.
So even though this is a relatively big film, I wanted to do that. I wanted to go in and go, I don't know anything. Whereas the Iron Claw film, and I knew the story already, you know, so it's a totally different perspective. I did really enjoy it, actually. I thought it was really good, really well made. Particularly liked Mark Ruffalo's character.
Yeah.
Because, not that he was funny, right? And that's not why I liked him. But sometimes it was getting quite dark, and it was getting quite So even some of the scenes, you're a bit like, whoa, taken aback by it. But then he comes in and just made me laugh a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it kind of lightened mm-hmm. the mood a little bit. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, because he was like a bastard in it. But like, yeah. I enjoyed him. I thought he was really funny. What did you think?
I don't know.
Is you think he was too much?
The no, accent, not, just no. His accent was really annoying.
Oh, Bella.
It wasn't even that. We saw him in a movie a little while ago, a war film that he was in. And it was quite bad.
What was that?
Doing a sort of English accent and stuff, and it was kind of like, oh God, I can't. Why would you cast him in that? You know, because he's not a good actor.
Yeah.
But he just sounded like it sounded terrible.
On saying that though, I forgave Willem Dafoe his terrible Scottish accent.
I was going to say that. Yeah. Ruffles wasn't even the worst, in it.
Yeah. I mean, it may have took me about an hour and a half to go. Yeah. Is he meant to be Scottish?
Yeah.
You know.
So I'm looking it up, but I can't. What is that about taking notes before?
I know, I'm sorry.
All the Light We Cannot See.
Definitely didn't see
it.
It's
a film. It was on. It was on Netflix, so we watched it. And it's kind of like you're just beginning to wonder. Okay, he's attached to this because it's bringing in money or finance or something. But the actors you could have got. You know, and it's not that Mark Ruffalo is bad. It's just that it wasn't really right. You know.
Yeah.
He's a charming man, a really good actor, but I just thought, oh no, and I got the same from this. I mean, there are a lot of people, I'm sure, who are fans of his performance and things like that.
Yeah, I think we're very much in the minority.
But there's so many actors out there you could have got who would have been extraordinary. But
even in Poor Things,
and we wouldn't
this
have had, and we wouldn't have had the. I didn't understand some of the casting, that was all.
And it was just, as a total detachment from the story you're going on, because I think it is a bit comic relief, you know?
If it was
someone else, a lot of times I'm going, that's Mark Ruffalo mm-hmm. playing this character. He's like, oh, no, and I don't know if that was like, who played Adam Driver's brother in House of Gucci? He was like that as well.
Jared Leto? No.
It wasn't Jared Leto, was it?
It was.
Was it?
And he's like, oh, no, can you do this? And he's just like, what are you doing? It was totally random.
Maybe it was Mark Ruffalo. Anyway, let's look it up. What is it? House of Gucci.
That was
Jared Leto was one of the brothers.
I don't think it's him, I mean, though.
I've put House of Leto.
Yeah, he
House
had, of like, Gucci. Lots of prosthetics and stuff, I think.
He did, yeah.
Really different.
So it was, you're right. It was, it wasn't Jerry Marriott. I'm driver. Jared Leto as Gucci, as Paolo Gucci.
Paolo?
It was him.
Okay, well, there you go. It reminded me of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very over the top.
I think I forgave the accent a bit because it was over the top. And I was
It's just a gesture.
You know, he's trying to do a really serious performance here, and, you know, I didn't think that, and maybe that was a bad thing because it's taken away from Emma Stone, who does a really good job.
No. We were being, I mean, I do think we were being a bit tight-assy, but the thing is, maybe we were just weren't in the mood, but...
You were falling asleep as well.
I was trying my best. That was the score.
Oh,
it's trying its best. It's. I feel like it's personally attacking me. You know. I think the music's really interesting, and I think it's really. It would work really well in theatre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that I don't like it, but I just 2.5 hours of this score. You know, it was. See what I mean.
The timing of that
and
this score. Dun, dun.
It's reminding me to talk about the score and football scores. But anyway, I think the theatre and stuff, I think the whole thing in the theatre, I don't know, it would have been, what was it? I feel like someone needs to smack me about the head with a baseball bat because I didn't like it. And you sort of think, a cinephile should like this. Because the whole thing, the way that it was filmed, the concept of the whole thing and all that, it's great.
There's a lot to really like.
But for some reason, and maybe it's to do with things that Manny was talking about the characters, I just felt detached from it, and I felt like I was appreciating everything that was happening and thinking this is really well done and really good, but. I feel like it's my duty to like it rather than...
Well, that happens all the time, though. I feel like that too sometimes.
It might be a case of on second viewing, we'd like it because we weren't thinking, what's going to happen next, what's going to happen next. You kind of could enjoy the moment rather than, where's this going?
Uh-huh.
And the fact that you were tired and asleep made a big difference to me, because if you're with somebody that's not really enjoying it, that kind of...
you're looking at them.
Yeah.
Right? I totally get you.
Yeah.
I know things that set my friends off in films, and if that happens in the film, immediately I'm not going, oh, they did that. I'm thinking, oh, no, they're gonna hate that.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
then I hear
yeah.
my friend go, oh, you know, and it's like, I can imagine Gregor's like that. Like, yeah. he just do a big sigh, you know. You're upset.
I think I was like that. I was like that with La La Land. I hated La La Land the first time I saw it.
I remember that.
The second time I saw it, I thought it was the best movie I'd ever seen.
Really?
So yeah, you were really I was so enthused.
So I think it's another. It is. I've not seen a film like that in a long time. Where I think, well, maybe I better go and see this again.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
second viewing obviously does help. I think.
Yeah.
Different perspective.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because it was unmistakably beautiful and. No CGI. I didn't know that.
Wow.
Today. So,
did they actually make those doggy chickens?
Oh yeah, I wondered about that. That must be.
Oh yes. Yeah, sure. No, it has to be then.
I think it was like the backdrops when they're like.
On the boat. Falling into the sea and things. That must be CGI.
I don't know.
I think they used one of those LED like volume things. So there's like bits of it that are CGI.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Right,
but they're still getting like colour off of the.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I thought it was a bit like they were using that in those Disney Plus Star Wars series, where it's like a big blue room, and some of it's like the walls were like the space.
Stars and stuff. Like the volume.
I thought it was
something
a bit like that.
Yeah. I think.
Mm-hmm. Like when you're on the boat and stuff, and it's like the horizon, you can see it's all multicoloured and stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe it was like that. I did enjoy it, but it's weird because it's one of those films where you don't come out thinking, oh, I had a great time. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those films where it's definitely... It sticks with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wait, there was people in the auditorium roaring with laughter at it. Finding it hilarious. Not just laughing.
Yeah.
Mm.
Laughing uproariously. We were going, I don't understand. What are they laughing at? I didn't even know what they were laughing at.
You get quite offended by that, though.
But you don't... You come out of this conversation, you were kind of like, what are they laughing at?
No, I'm like that with just people in general, you know? Them all starting to eat at the beginning of films.
All I'm meaning is that people get so many different things from it. I think it's a...
Awkward laughter as well, probably, because some of it's quite like, oh, like...
But no, it was hilarious, like Billy Connolly had just told a joke or something. It was like that.
Maybe we should go again. We should maybe get a wee bit drunk first.
I had a bottle of wine when I went to the Everyman.
Oh, very nice.
Sat in the comfy seats with a bottle of wine.
Did you wear a suit?
No.
Oh, see, we don't do that.
We should do that.
I know, we go to Cineworld.
Although if you don't like people eating, that's likely because they bring stuff to your table, like during the film.
Yeah. There's no wrappers and papers and stuff, but it's plates. So...
That's okay then.
It may actually be worse.
Fine.
As soon as I said that, I thought that might be worse.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you order before and then the film starts and there's still people getting fed and you're trying to.
But you always feel weird when you don't order anything. I feel rude when I don't. I've only been two or three times. But
I order stuff, but go and time it.
That seems a bit fussy to me.
What?
That kind of palaver. You know, I just want to just
go see the film.
Yeah, with my coffee and just. That's all I want to do.
I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in the Everyman in a big fancy couch, and it was great experience. But then I saw that film about Michael Jordan's shoes, Air.
Air.
That came out last year.
Jordan's shoes.
And the fact I saw that in the Everyman.
What made you want to go and see that?
I don't know.
Who thought that was a good idea?
I don't know, but there was no jump scares.
No, it's all about trainers and there was no jump scares.
That's his joke.
That was a joke, but I enjoyed it, but I think I enjoyed it because of the surroundings. There was no way I would have watched that film and not fallen asleep in a normal cinema, you know.
Wow.
So I think it does help the environment, depending on where you're at. But that's interesting, you just didn't love the film. I'm not saying that you should have loved it or anything like that, but to see the kind of stylistic aspects of it, the fact that they're working on our brain and stuff like that, I did not expect it to be that kind of, not graphic, but a bit in your face with it.
Just remembered something. So, she's pregnant. She dies.
Yeah.
Then spoiler.
Sorry. They put the brain of the baby in her.
Uh-huh.
Is that not weird?
I think it's almost a grey.
It's incredibly weird.
Uh-huh. But then so that she has a second chance, apparently.
So you want a Frankenstein story that's believable.
So she has a second chance at life. And she's not
But do you think she was really good? Like when she was first walking around and stuff, and she's staggering, and she's just peas and stuff like that. Mm. Like I was like, what is she meant to be?
I know.
And yeah. Then it's explained to you, you know.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, I get you now.
Did they say that it, like, she ages, the brain ages quicker or something? Because she like gets she old pretty quickly.
I think
does
so.
She get, yeah. Well, she gets sexually active quite quickly. Yeah. Does she?
Yeah.
Then she needs money. Yeah, yeah, she does. Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. Some is that
quite? Well, I don't know.
Yeah. How long. I know. Question. Yeah. How quickly does that brain develop?
Yeah. Just think, it must have been quite not tricky to play that character, but just the kind of journey that she would go through from playing a toddler, and then she's doing all these like in this brothel and things like that. You know what I mean? Like one extreme to the other.
Yeah.
So I thought she did really well, and I think she's got her Oscar nomination. I don't know if she'll win, but she's got a good chance, you know.
Yeah.
Who's she up against? Carey Mulligan, Maestro. She's up against Lily Gladstone from Killers of the Flower Moon, where she plays an unwell woman for 3.5 hours, and she just is, it's unwell acting she does. Mm-hmm. She just lies there the whole time and just looks ill.
Right.
And she does it incredibly, but that's what she does the whole time.
Mm-hmm. She's nominated for an Oscar.
She's nominated, yeah.
Okay.
Who
but
else?
Did she become ill? Like, you know, Robert De Niro put weight on for Raging Bull. Did she sort of, like,
no, I don't think
get
so.
A virus or something?
I don't think so. No.
You know, you expect some sort of commitment.
You just lie there and look sore, is what I think the direction was. And she did it for 3.5 hours, 3 hours and 26 minutes to be exact. And then somebody who sat in the back row of the cinema, it was quite busy, the cinema I was in, 3 hours and 26 minutes this film is, right? So the end of the film is happening, right? Not to spoil it, but you can tell this is the end scene.
Right.
It's one of those bits where we're like tying up those ends, right? And this is the time where the people decide to leave because I better beat the traffic. I've sat here for 3 hours and 20 minutes. 3 hours and 26 is too much. So they stood up. They were in the middle of the row, at the back row. They stood up and left as this last scene is happening. So we're all like distracted from the film. Whatever, they're gone. 2 minutes later, they come back in because they've left their phone.
Oh my God. Yeah.
3 hours and 26 minutes later. It's just like this after it. So that ruined my enjoyment slightly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just leave your phone for another 4 minutes, you know?
Wow.
So she's up for it. And then also Sandra Hüller is her name, and she plays the lead character in Anatomy of a Fall, which is another one of the Oscar films, and it's a really good film, really good performance. And there's a fifth person nominated, I can't remember who it is.
Have we seen Anatomy of a Fall?
No, but I just rented it.
Yeah, you've got to check it out before the Oscars. Right. We're going to do a predictions podcast, by the way, so you need to watch as many as you can.
Okay, folks.
Right.
See what I mean?
Bossy.
I can't remember. Who's the third nominee? It's a very tough category this year. I'll tell you that for free. Wait there.
No Margot Robbie.
No Margot Robbie.
Oh, well. What's happened?
I know. Annette Bening it is. In a film called Naiad, which I've not seen. You need to watch that.
Okay. Has Annette Bening won before? Because you know how it's voted for by the Academy, and you know when you get to a stage where you've been nominated several times and never ever got one.
Then you.
Did she not get one for Grifters?
She may have done, but is that what happened with DiCaprio, where he had
eventually
to win it for The Revenant?
Got to give him.
It had to give him it.
Yeah, eventually.
And he was good in the film, but he was better in other things.
Aye, well that's what happens I mean? All the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Carey Mulligan, based on what I've seen so far, I think Carey Mulligan.
He was amazing as Maestro. So good in that film.
That's quite divided, though, isn't it?
It is, but so Poor Things, good. Happy to see it again, do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
I think
consensus?
I probably will see it again.
Yeah,
maybe not at the cinema. Probably wait. I know you think probably do need to see it at the cinema, but I've seen the beauty of it. Now I need to understand it a wee bit more.
Mm-hmm. It's like you saw it in the cinema at first. Yeah. You know what I mean? The other time would be fine. Although an equally kind of strange film that I didn't see at the cinema was Saltburn.
Yeah.
And was that exclusively on streaming services, or did it have a cinema run?
I don't know,
it may have been
an art housey sort of thing.
That would have been quite good, the cinema, I thought. There was some very nice, visually stunning bits, no pun intended, at some points. But yes, Saltburn, another film. Barry Keoghan is his name, and very handsome actor, but very strange actor. Very talented actor. And again, is he off for Best Actor? For this film?
I don't think Saltburn's up for anything. After, because we'd watched the
Banshees of Inisherin. I like that.
Yeah, so you know the two opposing characters in that for him are incredible. He was the brother, wasn't he?
Yeah,
the brother.
No, he's
he was
really
nominated for that. I think last year.
I like that film a lot. That's right up my street.
like that.
The kind of quirky writing and stuff, wasn't it?
Martin McDonagh.
Martin McDonagh, that's Martin right, McDonough. Yeah, yeah. Loved what did he do? What was the other one he did? There was recent. Three Billboards. He did Three Billboards.
Mm-hmm. Martin McDonagh.
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. That's right, that one was good too. But yes, so what did you think of Saltburn?
I seen it, I watched it after the hype. I watched it like a couple of weeks ago.
Mm.
And I'd heard people talking about it, but I didn't really know. I hadn't heard any spoilers or anything.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard all the hype about it, and I watched it, and I liked it. But that was probably about it.
Yes. Once you hear hype, you sort of you can't ever match that.
Well, this is that.
Whereas I'd heard bad things about it. People on my Facebook, my arty-farty people, didn't enjoy it. They said it was this and blah, 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 and it really affected my desire to go and see it. I said, oh, no, I don't fancy seeing it. Oh, it's Tory nonsense and it's just this and that. And so I said, oh, let's not bother going to see it. But my kids made me see it.
Mm.
And I enjoyed it much more than I thought I would. I was told it was a Brideshead revisited.
Mm.
But no, I think there was. I think it was much, much more to it than what I was led to believe. I think that was again what's going to happen next. It was so weird as well, wasn't it? This family, once again, probably didn't feel emotionally involved with them. Quite mm-hmm. similar in that, but. I felt more comfortable watching it than I did watching Poor Things. Foolish Things.
Foolish Things over the top. Yeah. Over the top things.
Yeah, but that might have been because I had a wee cup of tea in my armchair.
Yeah.
Rather than him snoring beside me in a full cinema.
I agree. I seen Poor Things first and then I seen Saltburn. Yeah, it was an easier watch. You maybe feel like you can relate to, is it Oliver that Barry Keoghan plays?
Yeah.
Mm.
Maybe feel like you can relate to that character a bit more, but then you don't really
everyone's seen it by now. Yeah. Right? I quite liked his family, not all being a lie.
Yeah, that was...
That was quite a good twist, wasn't it?
Well, there's the one moment in the film that totally changed it for me is the bathtub scene bit, right?
Mm.
That's what everybody's...
And it just... I love the films like that where, like, there's a moment where you think it's going one way and then, like, boom, it totally changes, right? I love films like that. That's a really extreme example of it. But I'm just sitting watching it going, okay, yeah, I was really liking him and I was feeling quite sorry for him and then that happens.
Mm.
And I was just like, whoa, he's a completely different person to what you're expecting.
Mm.
Yeah.
But then the stuff with the family, that's another twist that you don't see coming either.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I quite like the fact that I had different layers to it. It was something that a film I'd not seen like that in ages.
But it also didn't go and explain that. It didn't ever take its time to explain that his family were actually quite well off.
Yeah.
It just let you think, oh, well, that's what's affected it. He's created this own... his own persona, nothing to do with his upbringing or anything like that. So,
but like, obviously, because he was saying that his dad had died, he gets like it shows you him getting a phone call, and then him being upset about it.
Mm.
But then, it's they don't go back to it. Until they go and meet the family, and then he's alive.
Yeah.
But as soon as they pulled up to the house, I was like, oh, his dad's going to answer the door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's close enough.
Yeah, no, I really liked it for that reason, and I love films with a bit of buzz as well. Like, as you were saying, for good or for bad, I don't know. But I don't know if it's just like people talking about films in general and just being around that chat. But I feel as if I had to watch it because of that. It was just another one of those Amazon films that was on there, and I was like, yeah, I'll watch it eventually. But then I feel as if because of all the buzz on social media, and then. I went in the pub with my friends and stuff, and they were all talking about it, which very rarely happens these days.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, let's sit down and watch it. And I had heard two things about it. I had heard, oh, you need to wait for the bath scene, and you have to wait for the graveyard scene. Those are the two things. So I was like, okay, whatever, what does that mean? But as it's going on, you're starting to go, this is getting weird, it's going to a different place and stuff. Mm-hmm. So because of those scenes in particular, I think it does kind of lift it a little bit. I don't know if it would have been as impactful if it just stayed the kind of course that it was going on, where like he was kind of like he was jealous friend, you know, and then his best pal's been taken away by girls and stuff like that. I don't know if that was going to be as interesting if it was going to stay like that, but the fact that it did have those two twists, I think it did help the film.
Yeah, Oh, definitely, it needed them.
Yeah.
When we left, we thought it was very like, I mean, in our generation had the wife, the cook, the thief, and our lover, which was filmed quite similarly to that sort of rich and what's the word when it's kind of like too much, when it's kind of like
visceral,
yeah. It was kind of like that one for this generation. Mm. It was very. I got a similar feeling from watching that as I did watching Saltburn. Just kind of like too much, too indulgent,
and right.
But in a good way. I mean, everything was indulgent, and the colours and the just the richness and the visceral. Yeah, that's a good word for it. So that we came out thinking it reminded us of that genre, didn't it?
I wasn't very fond of the trailer, because the trailer just made me think of Brideshead Revisited, and I thought, oh, it's going to be like that. Not that Brideshead Revisited is something to, you know, be down about, but it's of its time. But I thought, oh, it's just another thing like that, you know. And I was hearing all sorts of things about Richard E. Grant and
that's right, yeah, Richard E. Grant.
On social media and all this, them working on it, and what's her name? The mother.
Rosamund Pike.
Yeah, Rosamund Pike. And so I was fascinated by that. And then, of course, when you start to watch it, you think, oh, I think I've got this. You know, I think, you know, if you know sort of cinema history, even a little bit, or even novels, if you read books, it's like it's real Patricia Highsmith stuff. It's like Talented Mr. Ripley. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically a fusion of Talented Mr. Ripley and Brideshead Revisited. It's even got a teddy bear in it, for goodness sake. You know what I mean? It's almost like it's a sequel, you know, of that. And so when you start to understand that, you then know that, oh, okay, I'm going to have to expect the unexpected here. There's going to be a twist, you know. And I thought Richard E. Grant was fantastic.
Yeah.
Really good. Yeah. I loved some of the writing was brilliant. I loved the sort of no-card type dialogue of Rosamund Pike's, you know, reminded me of a couple of characters in his plays.
Yeah, and fun.
And for me, it didn't have a right-wing agenda or a Tory agenda, let's say, at all. In fact, for me, it had the opposite. It was all about hauling down the establishment and hauling down the empire. Mm-hmm. And if anything, you know, if you wanted to read anything political into it, it was very much about that, about... Mm-hmm. You know, about how fragile the establishment actually is, you know, and how much they work to try and protect it.
And did you see it coming, you know? The ending, like the way it goes, the story?
Began to see it coming, but not how, not exactly how, but I expected there to be that twist, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of
And I always thought
feed it to you at the end a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of unravels quick.
Yeah.
And I always thought there was some sort of clever frisson between Rosamund Pike's character and Oliver, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't quite know how they managed to do that in retrospect when I think back. Because there wasn't really... There must have been something, you know, but you're watching and thinking...
I was maybe thinking something was going to happen there.
Yeah, you know? With those two. Yeah.
That's kind of what I thought the end goal was.
Yeah.
Originally, and then he kills her. Sorry again. I thought maybe it was he was trying to get with her.
But is it worth going to see? We need a measure, don't we?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Is it good?
I think so.
Are there enough good bits in it?
I don't, yes, it is good, but you don't want to know the twists.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, but you know, you watch films with people that do try and figure out all the twists as you go along, and I guess it's about proving them wrong.
Yeah.
You don't go, okay, well, that's not, you know, what where you thought it was going to go. I was asking people, you know, this is the good bit, what is the best bit, what was your favourite bit of the episode, but sometimes that or the bit of the film, but sometimes it's hard to pick just one moment, because it's more about... You were kind of talking about that last week, Ian, about the kind of tempo of the film. You know what I mean? One thing has to lead to another for it to work. Yeah. You know, it's not just one moment in the film. Mm. But I would definitely recommend it, and I would have actually liked to have seen it in the cinema. I would have saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I kind of wish that I had seen it in the cinema.
I found myself... You didn't like it because you had the hype, didn't you?
I had the hype. Yeah. And then you kind of, in your head... tell yourself what it's going to be like.
Yeah. Mm.
And then if it doesn't live up to that, then... Mm. Or if it's better than...
That, yeah.
It's either
that,
better or it's not as good as what you thought.
That did used to be when I was sort of real hardcore cinema gore. That was one of my things. Was you always know when it's getting to the award season.
Yeah.
Like, it starts just before Christmas kind of thing, isn't it? And you start getting the serious films, the good films, and because people are holding back, you know? And I was always in my mind to go and see them before I heard anybody talk about them.
Yeah.
And just ignore, you know. But it's difficult these days when you've got a bunch of acting students coming up to you going, have you seen that yet?
Yeah.
What do you think? It's brilliant, isn't it? You know, and you're thinking, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
That's ruined it.
But we used to do that, do you?
I know you did, yeah. It started with you lot. Yeah. But, you know, it is better if you don't, you know, like, you don't experience the hype, because then it just sort of puts you in a... It's like when you listen to Mark Kermode or somebody telling you how good a film is, you're sort of almost determined to hate it.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. I don't know why. Happens.
Oh, well, I didn't like it then.
Yeah. I mean, not just... I don't mean him specifically. I mean people like that.
Yeah,
know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm clearly that, especially when I'm told something... Like, you know, you watch something that's quite arty and you're supposed to like it. In the back of my head, I'm like, didn't really bother that much.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. I guess I can appreciate how good it was made, you know, like Poor Things, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was parts of it where I was like, it's a very well-made film, very well-shot scene and stuff like that. But
that's what you're looking for, isn't it? You go in different moods and things.
Yeah, definitely.
It's very stuffy in here. You've got rid of all the windows and things. No wonder you're ill.
Well, it's night time and we've got the lights on.
Thank you, everybody, for listening and watching this episode of the Good Bit Podcast. Take care of yourselves, and we'll catch you all down the road.
Bye.